In the time of our pandemic, a lot of folks didn't have their big cookouts like they normally do because of physical distancing and trying to maintain safe spaces and safe distances. I know when my family were younger and all living at home, we used to have fairly large gatherings at Independence Day. We would come and we'd celebrate. Usually it would be our family plus grandparents plus cousins and uncles and aunts. And that could easily get into the 20s of coming and having a cookout, which was nice, and we enjoyed doing that. And of course, there are Christmas and Thanksgiving holidays that are big events. Now, typically, when we have a big event, we don't wait till the day before to say, okay, so what are we going to do with this? And we don't wait till Wednesday before Thanksgiving and think, you know, we probably should have bought a turkey. And who do we want to have over? You know, so it's just a time that really tends to be a time that requires planning. And mostly because it's stressful enough without waiting to the last minute to do things and then trying to get things done. And let's just be honest, when you're also trying to coordinate with meals for other people and trying to bring it in, sometimes that doesn't work so well either. So, you know, there's always a lot of planning to pull off a good family gathering, isn't it? So today we're going to be looking in the Gospel of Mark, chapter 14, verses 12 through 31, as the disciples are preparing this Passover time. It's the Last Supper passage. It's the institution of the Lord's Supper. And it is interesting because it doesn't appear to the disciples that much planning had been going on. So let's take a look at Mark chapter 14, verses 12 through 31. In the first day of unleavened bread, when they sacrificed a Passover lamb, his disciples said to him, "Where will you have us go and prepare for you to eat the Passover?" Now, Jerusalem in that day usually ran about 55,000 people, which back then that was a pretty good sized town. But when it was Passover time, it would run between 180,000 to 200,000. So almost four times the amount of people would be pouring in. Now, as the pandemic was starting, you know, just beginning, and people were having to shelter in and had to buy food, we started running out of things very quickly. First, toilet paper, because, you know, that's what we do, snow, blizzard, pandemic, you know, tornado, toilet paper. And then it became all the cereal was gone, all the oatmeal was gone, all the meat disappeared. It was just people were buying in a frenzy. And even at holiday time, if you wait too long trying to find the right size turkey, trying to find one that's thawed and not frozen, that becomes an issue. So here is the day of unleavened bread, and the disciples have come to Jesus and said, so what do you want us to do to prepare for this? I guess it could be just a bunch of guys, you know, that just kind of winging it like guys kind of tend to do. But here we go. So they come and ask. And he said, and then he sent two of his disciples and said to them, "Go into the city, and a man carrying a jar of water will meet you. Follow him, and wherever he enters, say to the master of the house, 'The teacher says, where is the guest room where I may eat the Passover with my disciples?' And he will show you a large upper room, furnished and ready. There, prepare for us." These are the instructions that Jesus gave them. And just think about those instructions, okay? It's very busy. He says, okay, well, what you need to do is you need to go into town, and you're going to see this guy carrying a water jar. Okay, there's a lot of guys carrying water jars. But this guy's going to come up to you. And then, wait for it, he's just going to take you to some other guy. And when he goes into the house, you just follow him in. And then this other guy, you just say, well, where's the room? And let him show you where the room is. That's the amount of instructions that Jesus gave them. It, you know, I'm thinking there behind me thinking now, so what is the guy's name? Don't need to know the name. He's carrying a water jar. Well, what color water jar? How big of a water jar? What does the guy look like? Doesn't matter. He's going to come to you. Well, how do we know that he's going to be? Doesn't matter. The guy who comes to you, whoever it is, just follow him. Okay, so where are we going? All you have to do is follow him. And so who's this other guy that we're going? You don't need that information. You know, it's kind of interesting. It's kind of almost like a little parable of life for us, isn't it? Because we just always want this information from God, all this stuff answered for us. And God's got things planned out, and he just gives us the information that we need, not necessarily the information that we want. And so, the rest of the verse, and the disciples set out and went to the city and found it just as he had told them. And they prepared the Passover. Just as he told them. They went. Some guy with a water jar came up to me and said, follow me. There wasn't even some secret code, you know. You know, that, you know, he says something like, you know, the, you know, like, you know, it looks like it might rain. And then, oh, but you know, it's always summer and it rains in the summer. I don't know. You know, so some crazy countersign. Nope, just follow him. And it was just like that. And then they prepared the Passover. And actually, Jesus had it already. Everything there that they needed to put the final touches, he had taken care of it. They're probably thinking, now when did he get around to doing that? But he did. So this is where we're going to pause for a moment, and we're going to prepare ourselves for the rest of the passage. And so if you'd like to participate in the Lord's Supper this morning, and you're comfortable about coming up, and coming up as a family unit, kind of giving space for others, you can take any of the elements that you want. If we should run out of juice up here, we have enough crackers, and there's some more juice that's up by the sound booth. Okay, so just as they're playing and singing, you can come forward.
With a prayer you fed the hungry, with a cry you stilled the storm, with a look you had compassion on the desperate and forlorn, with a touch you healed the leper, with a shout you raised the dead, with a word expelled the demons, with a blessing broke the bread.
And picking back up in verse 17, it says, "And when it was evening, he came with the 12, and as they were reclining at the table and eating, Jesus said, 'Truly, I say to you, one of you will betray me, one who is eating with me.'" Now, the Passover time was a time of celebration. The children of Israel celebrated every year at Passover the time that God delivered them from their slavery at the hands of the Egyptians. So this was a time of remembering of God's deliverance. And it was also a time for them to look toward the coming of the Messiah, and especially in that time when they were under Roman rule, looking for the Messiah to come and deliver them once again from the deliverance of the bondage, of the harsh treatment of their enemy. But here, Jesus is now taking time to focus on that the enemy is not outside the door, outside the room, but in the very room that they are in. He is now turning their attention that one of them, who is eating at the Passover time, would betray him. So we are moving from celebrating God's deliverance from Egyptian bondage and to now to be the Messiah being delivered into the hands of the enemy. And he goes on, "And they began to be sorrowful, and to say to him one after another, Is it I? Am I the one?' He said to them, 'It's one of the 12, one who is dipping bread into the dish with me.'" So it's really interesting to them that there must be something in their lives that they're a little bit struggling with, because they're wondering, well, could it be me? Oh, I hope I didn't do anything. They're probably going back to, did I say something to somebody? Did I do something? And they're trying to rack their brains about whether or not maybe they have inadvertently betrayed Jesus Christ. But then he goes on and he says, "It's the one who is dipping bread into the dish with me." Now, we get a little bit more understanding of this from another gospel. We need to remember that the gospels were written to give us different views of Jesus. Jesus is the Messiah. Jesus is the Son of God. Jesus is the perfect servant. Jesus is a perfect man. And even as we look at the different accounts of the Last Supper, there's nuanced things that we learn from it. We learn something from Mark, his emphasis on the betrayal. And then we're going to look at the Gospel of John in just a moment, because we see more this conversation about the one dipping the bread. Because it wasn't just generally out there talking to all the disciples. It was actually just to a couple disciples that would understand what was happening. But before we do this, I have a little diagram, and you'll find this diagram on in your bulletin insert. And in this diagram, you'll see a brown diagram that's shaped in the little circles all the way around. I created this. I know you could, wow. My technical skill for producing a chart or a graph on the computer is really, it's unequaled by any 5-year-old. Okay? So... But this will serve as a good enough reference for you. This is how typically the Passover meal would have been celebrated. It would be a U-shaped table so that those who are serving and bringing food could come up and serve each person. Each person would not really be seated around the table. They would be reclining. So their left shoulder would be down and their left arm would be on the ground. Their feet would be away from the table. And so they wouldn't be sitting facing each other. They'd be leaning kind of sideways and looking around like this. They'd reach over with their right hand, they'd take the food and they'd eat it. So everybody is kind of facing one direction. Now the purple dot right there would be where Jesus would be seated, because he's the host. He's the one that prepared for everything. He had the room reserved. He had all the materials there that was needed. So he was the host. The people to his right and to the left would actually hold a significant place. So the person to his right, the little blue dot to his right, would have been John the apostle. He would have been the trusted one, the confidant, somebody that Jesus would have trusted the most. Then another person on the other side would actually be the next most important person in the room. Typically, the host would decide who that is. However, the disciples probably decided that. They would work on that. And in another gospel, they were jockeying for positions about who was the greatest in the kingdom. So the disciples voted, and they placed their Judas. He's the treasurer. He's the one that everybody looked up to. And it will make sense as we go through that that has to be Judas at that position. Then we don't know where the other disciples are, but we're pretty sure where that other royal blue person is. We're pretty sure that is Peter. And if Judas is the top-ranking disciple, Peter is the lowest-ranking disciple. And the disciples would have figured that out and had put him there probably because he rubbed people the wrong way and they voted him off the island. Well, not quite voted him off the island, but pretty close to voting him off the island. And it should be a warning to us that sometimes people who seem to be the ones that have everything together and the most trustworthy, the most spiritual, might be the Judas of the bunch. So let's look at the Gospel of John, and you have that diagram in front of you on the piece of paper if you have a bulletin, so you can kind of follow this. After saying these things, Jesus was troubled in the spirit and testified, "Truly, truly, I say to you, one of you will betray me." The disciples looked at one another, uncertain of whom he spoke. One of his disciples, whom Jesus loved, was reclining at the table at Jesus' side. That would be John the apostle. So Simon Peter motioned to him to ask Jesus of whom he is speaking. So Peter, in order to talk to John, who John's on one end of the horseshoe table, so Peter would have to be at the other end of the horseshoe table so that they could see each other. And Peter's going, "Psst, hey, John, ask him. Who is this?" So, verse 25, so that that disciple, leaning back against Jesus, said to him, "Lord, who is it?" So you can see if John is there, his left arm down, he would lean back, look over his right shoulder and go, "Who is it?" And Jesus would have leaned back down and he would have said this, "It is he to whom I give this morsel of bread when I had dipped it." So when he had dipped the morsel, he gave it to Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot. The other disciples weren't, and you'll see, they weren't picking up on this. The only ones that may have picked up on it, John, probably for sure, and probably Peter, because they were looking. And I can imagine the shock on their faces when it was Judas. And we have here the intimacy of betrayal. It's one of the 12, one that they all trusted enough that he bore the money bag. The one that they looked up to such a degree that they placed him in the next seat of honor next to Jesus Christ. And Judas is having and sharing this little moment with Jesus, an intimate moment of eating together, side by side, sharing the same bowl, which would have been right there. all while he's planning on betraying him. Verse 27, then after he had taken the morsels, Satan entered into him, and Jesus said to him, what you are going to do, do quickly. Now no one at the table knew why he said this to him. Some thought that because Judas had the money bag, Jesus was telling him to buy what they needed for the feast, or that he might should give something to the poor. So that just would kind of make sense. We might need more food. There's more things, more celebrating that's going to be happening over the next couple of days. And then probably thinking, well, you know, Judas brought up that whole thing about the ointment and gift selling it to the poor. Maybe he's going to actually go out and give some money to the poor. So after receiving the morsel of bread, he immediately went out and was at night. Then we return back to Mark. So we now see here's that how all that was going down. And he goes on in verse 21. For the Son of Man goes as it is written of him, but woe to that man by whom the Son of Man is betrayed. It would have been better for that man if he had not been born. So one of the 12 had spent 3 years with Jesus, had gone out on missionary journeys with Jesus, was part of the 2x2 that was sent out, actually was commissioned to go out and preach and to heal. He spent time with them. And here he has had the most light of anybody that could ever have. And he betrays him. The sinfulness, the ultimate pinnacle of man's sinfulness is seen in Judas at this moment. The sinfulness of man clashing with the character and nature of God. And then Jesus goes on. And as they were eating, he took bread, and after blessing it, broke it and gave it to them and said, take, this is my body. So if you would take that piece of bread that you have, whether it's in the top of that little cup, or if you got one of the little baggies, if you go ahead and break it. We look at bread in the Bible. Bread is often used to illustrate that of giving life. Jesus referred to himself as the bread of life. He fed the 5,000. He fed the 4,000. And it is an image of him not only as the life giver, but it's also the image of him as the great shepherd, the good shepherd, providing for the sheep. He not only gives us our physical life as God, but he also gives us our spiritual life. And it's interesting that as he takes that symbol of life and hands it to the one that would betray him, and the person earlier, and he gives him a little morsel, you know, it also carries that whole idea of that betrayal in there. And when we eat of the bread, we take a moment, we look at this, and we sometimes maybe just go through the motions of it, but it is an opportunity for us to remind ourselves that Jesus came, he took on the form of flesh in order to understand us, to know us, to reveal God's perfect presence and love to us, and then to die for us on the cross. It is also an opportunity for us to kind of ponder our relationship with him. To make sure that it is a genuine relationship, that it's not just one that maybe it looks good, maybe everybody thinks we have this really kind of mapped out and real mature, but maybe we're not there. But he gives them a piece of bread as a symbol of his body. of his body that was going to be nailed to the cross as a sacrifice for our sins.